Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, I'll be interviewing Deborah Clark from the White Ribbon Alliance on Reducing Maternal Mortality Rates Worldwide. Also, a Boston radio show got a doctor who refuses to prescribe birth control to single women to explain herself, and a segment on what happens when a tanking economy intersects with American sex lives. Salons got an ongoing parody of redneck conservatism called the Red State Update, and they recently had a hilarious parody of the tone-deaf, sexist preaching at teenage girls about abstinence.
There's a thing called a teenage boy, and it's probably inching its way up next to you waiting for you to uncross your legs.
Hey.
A teenage boy ain't nothing but half a mustache and a hard-on, okay?
Hey,
they smell like beef jerky and Axe body spray.
What?
You are the only one that's got any sense. So you're the one that's going to have to guard your dignity and your magic beauty place, okay? Because they will try to stick it in you any chance they get. And them things go off, okay?
Right.
And the next thing you know, you got a baby that looks like the guy with the bowl haircut that was listening to Creed making out with you a second ago.
Sadly, this is basically the sex education that we had in my small town growing up. Just boys are horny, girls aren't, and the only birth control pill you need is an aspirin you hold between your knees. It worked as well as you can imagine, which is not at all. At my tiny school, someone was always pregnant from junior high on. Hat tip to Kat Ion for tipping me off on this next story. The Bush administration, as it was running out the door, shoved a last-minute rules change through Health and Human Services over the protests of hundreds of thousands of non-crazy citizens. That rule expanded the number of people who have a right to obstruct women's access to health care services without getting fired. Now it's not just the doctor who can say no, but the receptionists and janitors. It also expanded the number of services covered, targeting contraception as a particular evil that needs to be eradicated one religious nut at a time. What doesn't get covered much is the people who do this refusing and why. Part of the reason, I suspect, is the anti-choice movement wants to push off anti-contraception sentiment as if it were rooted in concern for fetal life. They're not against sex, they say. They just believe that the pill causes abortion, though this belief is wishful thinking that has no basis in science. But Boston's public radio show, Here and Now, managed to snag an anti-choice doctor who obstructed women's access to contraception. And, well, her reasoning is not what we've been told the reasoning is. The doctor is Dr. Michelle Phillips of San Antonio.
But last year, resigned from the hospital where she worked, Dr. Phillips. Why did you resign? What happened?
My story is that it directly relates to the right of conscience for healthcare providers in the way that they practice medicine. And I was pressured to provide a service that I felt that was morally and religiously unethical.
And what was that service?
The service was providing contraception to single women.
Come again? Did she say single women specifically? Why, yes. Yes, she did.
Did you ask women whether or not they were single?
I individualize all my patients. I get to know them, their lifestyles, their medical history, jobs, that sort of thing. That's all important in taking care of a person.
So it sounds as if in the course of getting to know them, you ask if they're single. And I just to clarify, so we're on the same page with you, are you saying that if you determine that a woman is married, you would prescribe contraceptives for her if she wants them?
It's a case-by-case situation.
This aspect of the right to refusal has almost been completely lost in the discourse. In the early days, when the anti-choice movement first happened upon this strategy, the fact that contraception was being given to some and not to others based on marital status was reported. But then I think anti-choicers realized that this pretty blatantly exposed their anti-sex, anti-woman agenda, and they focused on confusing the birth control pill with the abortion pill, which just goes to show that they really are using faux concern for life as a cover for their real agenda. What's interesting is that she wastes their time before telling them no. More punishment for the sluts, I suppose. And it's clear that Dr. Phillips thinks that there are only three ways women can be: married, virginal, or sluts.
It's whether it's medically indicated for the individual. And if it's, an individual comes into my office and they're requesting a certain service or medication, I'm going to find out whether it's actually safe for them, if it is indicated or necessary, because all medications have side effects. And in the area of contraception, I'm very uncomfortable with prescribing contraception to women who are unmarried, because they are at a higher risk for contracting sexually transmitted diseases, which several are incurable.
You'd think someone with a medical degree would be smart enough to realize that just because you're on the pill doesn't mean you can't use a condom, and that unmarried women are perfectly capable of being in monogamous tested relationships. So I'm calling shenanigans. She's not so much about the legitimate health concerns as she is trying to bully women into marriage. Unintended pregnancy is well understood as a greater risk to your health than contraception. Marrying someone out of duty or fear because of an unintended pregnancy is also not good for your blood pressure.
Well, Dr. Phillips, why can't you do both? Why can't you prescribe birth control and say, now listen, here's what I think you should know. I'm worried that in using birth control, you might have more activity than if you didn't have the birth control. And here's what can happen. You know, even hand out a one sheet on wearing condoms and protecting yourself against sexually transmitted diseases. Why can't you do both?
Because I don't need to. It is my right as a physician to not go against or violate my own conscience. And why should I violate my conscience for someone else's behaviors?
For the entire interview, she dodges questions like this. Asked if it's a good idea to let your patients suffer STDs and even abortion to punish them for being bad girls who have sex, she doesn't answer the question, but just says being a prig is her right. Sure, it's her right, but it makes her a bad doctor, and I hope that her patients take their business to someone more interested in health than freaking out about sex. I'd like to welcome Deborah Clark, the Communications Director from White Ribbon Alliance for Safe Motherhood. Deborah's here to talk about the White Ribbon Alliance's Mother's Day Every Day campaign. Welcome to RealityCast, Deborah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so in short, what's the Mother's Day Every Day campaign, and what's the White Ribbon Alliance for Safe Motherhood, and what are you here to do?
Well, let's start with the Mother's Day Every Day campaign for healthy moms and newborns. It's a campaign to raise awareness and to advocate for greater U.S. leadership to save the lives of the women and newborns who die for lack of basic health care that is taken for granted by most women in the world today. It's a campaign where the White Ribbon Alliance have joined with CARE and a diverse group of leaders from all walks of life, crossing the political spectrum, because we believe that we need to educate the American people and create more political awareness so that our administration, as well as Congress, will prioritize investments in maternal health and assistance to the countries where those investments are needed to strengthen health systems.
The organization and the campaign state that one of the greatest factors in holding a lot of parts of the world back is the high maternal mortality rates, including the United States to a degree.
Yes, and unfortunately, we're talking not only about the loss of the life of the women, but also, to a great degree, the loss of life of the infants and, believe it or not, of children. If they have children already, children up to the age of 10 are as much as 10 times as likely to die as children whose mothers have survived childbirth. So, yeah, this is devastating. And then the effect further on the families and the communities and nations is that we have removed the person who is most likely in so many cases not only the caregiver, but also the provider in terms of the economic health of the family, and then of course their role in the community, and in fact in their nation, to economic growth as well as peaceful sustainability of people is tremendous. We definitely see this as a good time to raise this as critical to the solutions that world leaders need to consider as they prioritize what needs to be done to lead us out of this crisis that is encompassing, the world, and of course in the developing world has been so severe for so long. Saving women's lives that are needlessly lost in childbirth is essential to economic growth. It is essential to empowerment of women fundamentally. The Millennium Development Goals that have to do with poverty reduction and have to do with human rights are directly impacted when we do not see the changes happening that will, in fact, strengthen health systems so we can save women's lives.
Why are maternal mortality rates so abysmally high?
Well, again, I think that the answer to that is if you examine where they're abysmally high, then it gives us a much better understanding of why they are. 99% of the deaths that are occurring in pregnant women, and specifically, due to the complications of childbirth, are happening in developing countries. They're happening in countries where health systems need to be strengthened, health workers, skilled health workers need to be available to women at a community level. They're happening in countries where as many as 50-60% of women are giving birth alone or with a neighbor who has no training in no skills and expertise in childbirth, or in communities where there is no access to emergency medical care. The Mother's Day Every Day is hoping to increase the assistance so that we can have an increase in skilled health workers, so we can have health systems strengthened, so every woman has access to quality care before, during, and after childbirth. This is a doable goal. Research shows that everywhere in the poorest of countries, in the most remote regions, in war-torn places, anywhere when the investment has been made, the legal and cultural and logistical barriers to care have been removed, women almost always will live through the complications that otherwise would kill her if she didn't have access to this care.
One thing I thought was really interesting in the materials that you sent out was that your organization cited low-cost intervention strategies that could reduce the maternal mortality rate by 75%. Can you give some examples of what a low-cost intervention is that could do a lot to save lives?
Again, when we talk about low cost, we're talking about things like the medications that, if available during childbirth, mean the difference between eclampsia being a complication that can lead to a woman's death and not. That when there is availability, for example, of blood, so that blood transfusions can be made, that can be the difference. An incredible number of the women who are dying, immediately following childbirth are basically bleeding to death. And then there's other things that have to do with, basic antibiotics, have to do with control of infection. Cost is all relative, but being able to increase skilled birth attendants, having the nurse midwives, having the midwives, having people, health workers that are trained to be able to recognize the complications that would require emergency care and be able to connect them with emergency care. These are all things that are very low cost. A package of maternal health services that would cost less than US $1.50 per person could make significant improvements in women's health in the 75 countries where 90% of maternal and child deaths occur. But what we're talking about there is in the context of a health system.
The issue doesn't really get much media coverage or government interest. Can you speak to this issue and the whys and how we can change it?
So we have to think about the media's attention to this issue always in a context. Frankly, in countries like India and Tanzania and Bangladesh and Nepal, even Yemen, the media pays attention to this issue. It is much more of an issue than the media has recognized in the United States. And in some ways, that's for good reason. You know, although the U.S. ranks 41 down in the world and has one of the worst records of maternal mortality in industrialized countries, again, relative to the severity of where you have as many as 1 in 7 women in dying in a country like Niger, to say that in the United States, 1 in 4,800 is dying, that doesn't necessarily seem like it's, an issue that requires much attention. Purpose of Mother's Day every day is to generate the public awareness and the political will so that our leaders recognize that in the United States, it is critical that all women have access to quality care before, during, and after childbirth. And even in the United States, the women, there are women who don't, and that's why the maternal mortality rate in the United States actually has been increasing every year for about the last 13 years. But that also the American people and our policymakers recognize that our economic security, our capacity to be able to be healthy and peaceful with the people of the world is integrally tied up with whether or not we're doing the most basic things that need to be done and supporting and giving assistance to countries so that women live through childbirth and are able to contribute to the health of their families and their nations. You know, we truly are part of one world here. I'm very optimistic that Mother's Day every day will be another reason why our leaders in the United States will give priority to the assistance that is really about strengthening and empowering women to play their role in the health and economic life of their countries.
You can find out more by visiting whiteribbonalliance.org. Thanks so much for coming on RealityCast.
Thank you very much.
Last week, in my humble opinion, might be the one that goes down in history as the week that the nation finally faced up to the fact that we're not facing just a recession, but a genuine depression. I think the moment that drove this home for me was when Rick Santelli went pure royalist on CNBC, screaming on the floor of the stock exchange about how the people who are getting foreclosed on aren't victims, but that he and his rich friends are because they're getting blamed. All they did was exploit people's trust in institutions like banks so that they could create false wealth to line their own pockets. Poor babies. Here's a tidbit for giggles.
You know, the new administration's big on computers and technology. How about this, President and new administration? Why don't you put up a website to have people vote on the internet as a referendum to see if we really want to subsidize the losers' mortgages, or would we like to at least buy cars and buy houses in foreclosure and give them to people that might have a chance to actually prosper down the road and reward people that could carry the water instead of drink the water.
That's the sort of open class warfare that I suspect we'll be seeing more of. This stuff has gone under the radar in coded language for a long time, but now it's front and center, and I don't know if the toothpaste can be shoved back into the tube. Depression economics will be different than recession economics, I suspect, because people will be clinging to their money even harder. In the Great Depression, certain industries demonstrated that they were pretty much recession-proof, and they were cheap forms of entertainment, like the movies and radio. It's in this spirit that I think we should approach this story.
The recession is hurting a lot of people, a lot of companies laying off workers, but One industry that seems to be doing well, latex. Yes, surprisingly, sales of condoms actually rose in the fourth quarter of 2008 and were up in January of 2009 as well. What does this mean? Well, I think it's pretty obvious. There are some activities, I guess, that may be recession-proof.
There are two general theories about why condom sales might go up during this time. One is simply that people will be staying home more and turning to sex for entertainment. The other is that people might be more cognizant of the need for contraception during an economic downturn, because babies are expensive. It's more fun to think the former, but the latter is also compelling for a very interesting reason. I think that it's quite likely that male investment in contraception is much likelier to wane during flush times than female investment. Pregnancy is about body issues, life issues, and other things more for women than for men, and for a lot of men, the financial burden looms the largest. So it makes sense that male-controlled contraception would become more popular during a time when men's biggest anxieties about babies are going up. Of course, Fox News had to go classy.
During these rocky financial times, some are turning to more than just comfort foods to help deal with all their worries. So what do you get when you mix what some are calling a recession in sex? Sexession. The tanking economy is actually being linked to a rise in sex addiction. Kendis, I can't even say it after saying succession.
Yeah, and I should point out that actor David Duchovny tonight is saying, why didn't I think of that as an excuse?
Uh-huh. You know?
Succession. That's about the stupidest word ever invented, because it sounds like a recession in sexual activity, but it's actually an acceleration of sexual activity. Fox News has been known to have a careless attitude with the truth, and now I guess we can say they have a careless attitude with the meaning of words. Do they know what a recession is? Or were they just told to do a story about sex and the recession and they didn't really bother to find out what the word recession means? I'm also going to take a moment to lodge my complaint against the concept of sex addiction. That's taking the addiction model just way too far. Not that people can't engage in destructive sexual behaviors, but the implication of the term sex addict is that someone just has too much sex, or that there's a point where you're doing it too much. Like orgasms degrade your health or something. Self-destructive behaviors involving sex can be cataloged without implying that sex itself is a dangerous substance that is inherently addictive. If you're doing it 10 times a week and it's not interfering with your life, why should you be concerned that you're a so-called sex addict? Probably just in a new relationship, it sounds like. Or home more often, trying to save money. And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts. Did you know that women are just so weird and different edition? Denver, Colorado radio talk show host Peter Boyles is getting the high beam intensity pressure campaign because of his sexism towards House member Diana DeGette. Listen to what he calls her.
I thought it'd be a handful of guys, but people are genuinely, and you could tell that they wanted to do something, yeah. But there was nothing to do. That our Colorado delegation by
Vagina DeGette
vote, yeah, all voted for this thing.
Oh, sure.
Both senators voted for it. Yeah. The one we know and that a guy we haven't met yet.
Yeah.
DeGette.
27 minutes after the hour, 7, 6:30 KHOW. That's, of course, yesterday with the President of the United States, and we've been calling her Vagina DeGette.
In a way, I can understand why he's in pain and he's lashing out by giving people unfunny nicknames. When your real name has both the word Peter and the word Boyles in it, then you probably feel like everyone else owes it to you to be called by the name of genitals or bad things that can happen to genitals. And if you like the podcast and RH Reality Check, I'd like to ask you to visit our new widgets page. You can get news widgets or a podcast widget to display on your own blog, Facebook, or MySpace page. Just a quick copy-paste to do your part in spreading the word about reproductive justice.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.